Howard's vision was for equal ownership with all his grandchildren, 80% to his 6 children, and 20% went to the 20 grandchildren at that time. Howard Sr. passed away in 2001 at the age of 70. Then we have generation 3 and 4. And, you know, we started out by Howard was the first generation, and we were the second, and Gary and them were the third, but then they switched it around and says, well, they need to go back to Sal. So kind of in midstream, we became all the way from second to third. So Sal was number one. And so I guess those are just numbers, but that's what people like to see, how many generations you went. And so Howard and I would be generation 3, and Gary would be generation 4. And the oldest one in generation 5 is Gary's oldest son, who just turned 15, who did work in the business a little bit last year as a busboy. In 2002, we had something happen, which, you know, we can all plan with all the everything that we want to do and how it's all going to work out in the end. And, you know, when we talk about decide what the exit strategy is when you start, and that's a good thing to put on paper, but you never know what the happenings are. We had one of the family members decided that he wanted to leave the business and go do something on his own, which was fine. It wasn't a rift or a problem. But then as we looked at that, we said, well, how does he exit? Because we didn't have a lot of plans. So we said, well, we have to value the business and decide, you know, what was 1/6 of the business worth and how we would do this and how we would pay for it and all that. And as we were going through the process with our estate attorney, he says, you know, this might just be a good time for you guys all to exit as far as shares of stock are concerned. So we talked about that, and we started the transition through a combined sale and gifting program that would ultimately provide for the retirement of the third generation family members. And so that's what we did. But what we did was, you say, well, gee, you gave up all your stock. Yes, we did, but we wrote into it that the stockholders had no voting rights. They were stockholders, which was the 20 grandchildren. They each had 5%, but our generation, the third generation, had control of the business for the next 20 years. So even though we were young at the time, just in our 50s, we gave up all our stock, but we controlled the company. So there's ways of doing that. You know, stock does not have to be synonymous with leadership necessarily, because it was the right time to do it. Tax purpose, it was a great way to go. Although we do read and talk a lot about that, maybe tax purposes are not always a reason to pass businesses on and do it certain ways. We need to do what's best for the family and everybody involved, not necessarily what's best with the government always. And so that shouldn't always be the driving force, although it should be a consideration because it can be very costly. So there are currently 20 shareholders owning 5% each of the business. There's 11 full-time in the fourth generation, 6 part-time, and 8 not working in the business who are either in college or involved in other things. Okay, Gary's going to do his from right there, and he will talk about ownership issues.
We're just going to talk about a couple of things that we still need to do ownership wise. Dad talked about the transition of the stock, and that's just kind of one piece of it. With the transition to my generation, there's 20 of us, and we don't have any majority shareholders. So we're all equal 5% shareholders, and it creates some challenges when you have an ownership pool that large, 20 people. Our ages range from 21 to 43 years old, and that in itself creates some unique challenges. Some are still in college. At the time this transition occurred, there were some probably in early elementary school, and so it created some challenges. With ownership age variances, we also have variances in our occupations and what we're currently experiencing in life. Some are still in college. Some are working within the business. Some are working, you know, outside of the business. Some are missionaries in other countries. And so it creates a diverse group of needs. Whereas in the previous generation, for most of that time, all 6 of the family members were working in the business, living here in Hartville, Ohio, and that created some more similarities. So a couple of the things that we think that we need to address going forward are liquidity needs. It seems early to start thinking about how our generation might end up exiting, but we do have to think about that. And maybe not even exiting and selling the shares, but what does it mean for pulling value out of the business? Everyone with this wide range of shareholders is at different places in their life. Some are still in college. Some are preparing to send their children to college. So there's a lot of things there. And so we're trying to look at what that means for us in the future for determining access to some of that capital that's in the company. Should it be, should ownership continue to remain equal? If you want access to that company, do you need to sell some shares? And then when you have unequal ownership, it creates a whole another set of issues that you need to take a look at. So those are a couple of the things that we're looking at. We're a subchapter S corporation. I think many of you probably understand what that is. It's a pass-through entity, so the taxes on the profits of the company are taxed to the individual shareholders. That also creates some unique challenges for us when we have people of differing income levels, some still in college or in missionary work earning nothing, no income at that time, and others earning their in the prime of their maybe salary or their earnings. And so that creates different tax liability issues, which creates different needs for distributions from the company. So there's it seemed really nice and easy to make a transfer of ownership 16 years ago around 16 years ago. But it also created some unique challenges that we've had to work through over time. We also do have a buy-sell agreement in place, and it has been in place for quite some time. I think it's extremely important to have, but one of the things that I was thinking of is you hope you never have to use it. It's really only there if at the time you can't agree on what needs to take place. And so in an ideal world, an ideal scenario, we won't use that buy-sell agreement. We'll come to agreement, but it is there, and with 20 shareholders, and there's probably a good chance that it will come into play at some point down the road. So one of the things that I, and Dad mentioned it a little bit, is when we talk about business transition and family business transition, I think we often think that ownership and leadership needs to change at the same time, and I guess I would challenge that, and I think that it can be healthy to look at them in kind of two different buckets. They're very very different. One is more transactional, and the other one is going to be maybe a little more relational. It's going to happen over a longer period of time sometimes, and I think in some respects, not always, but in some respects, the ownership piece is kind of easy. Actually transferring responsibilities and leadership and culture and all of those other things that go along with it is a task that that we're definitely still working on. So Howard's going to speak a little bit to that aspect as we've been trying to work on that pretty diligently over the last number of years.
I just want to, before he starts there, if I may say, we all have unique situations that happen in our families that it's like it just doesn't fit the mold. One of Howard Sr.'s desire was he had six children, and those six children, their spouses, owned the business equally when he passed it on. But his desire was to go to that one more level. I have six children. Howard has three. Some family members have two. But his desire was, so I owned 1/6 of the business, yet my kids all got an equal share of the business. So they each got 5%. So he had, even though it's not on paper, his desire was carried out that I want all my grandchildren to own it equally. And so that took some giving and taking to make all that happen. And some people gained, some people lost, but it really hasn't been a rift, and it has worked. And even in my case, I had four biological children and two adopted children, and they're treated just like everyone else. And so that's a very unique situation. It probably doesn't happen very often, but I think if you are business owners and you have certain desires that you want to do, I think the thing is communication, and don't have it in a will somewhere that pops up all of a sudden and says, whoa, we didn't know this was coming. But communicate with your children and tell them what you want and what you want to see happen. And sometimes you have to change because things in life do change. But I just to share with you, that was a unique thing that happened in our generation.
Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about leadership transfer, which is a lot of what we're working on currently. I do want to clarify one thing that Vernon said. I was not in my 50s 16 years ago. I was 49.
Very close.
Okay, for mom and dad both, family has always been very important, and you know they've made a lot of effort to keep us a close family. We vacation together every other year. We all go up to Michigan. There's like 80 of us now, so it's kind of a little tougher. Well, actually, this year we're going to Tennessee or something. But anyway, every other year we go on vacations. We had a farm. We all built houses on the same farm. The kids grew up more like the cousins grew up more like brothers and sisters, really. So, mom and dad, it was a big deal for them, and I think that's been part of the success of our family working together because it was so important to them. We also have a Tuesday morning corporation meeting where everybody who's working full time in the business, we meet, and there's 12 or 14 of us that get together. Dad started this back in the 80s, and you know, I think it's probably one of the most important things that he started for us, because it gives us a way to pass on our culture to the next generation. They get to learn how we make decisions. Donations and things like that are an important part of that, understanding what our philosophy of business is, how being able to pass that on. I think the Tuesday morning meetings has been a big deal for us. And I don't know, how old would you have been, maybe, Gary, when you started coming?
I came during the summers when I was in high school and college, but, you know, yeah. I don't know, 24, my state came on a regular basis.
Yeah, but even as high school, well, you guys came, and so I was a very important part of what we as a, how we've passed on culture. You know, one of the things that's changing for us is, in the past, ownership, management, board, it was all one thing. And you know, that's got to change a little bit as things change. Currently, you know, we work with Delaware Valley. Some of you might know Henry Landis and their organization to work on how to work on separating the mountains. You know, the different as my generation looks at phasing out in our day-to-day operations. You know, where do we fit in? You know, the board, or you know, being all together just doesn't work anymore as things change. So we are working at trying to separate, you know, the ownership. We now have owners from that aren't involved in the business. Never used to be that way. Some of them don't even live in the state. And the management, you know, as my generation, Vernon and I, start moving out. How's that going to work, and the board? So I guess that was it. So we have just recently, our board is the five of my generation that work in the business, and we have just recently decided that we are going to bring on some outside board members this year, and you know, hopefully that'll bring us in some other outside thinking a little bit. You know, we have. Because we're very diversified in our business, we do have, we're not completely ingrown, I guess, because of the different kinds of business we have, but we think bringing some outside board members onto our board will be very helpful for us. So that part of it we're working on. The ownership piece of it, we've already kind of said all the next generation, G4, equal owners, so we kind of have that taken care of. But now what about management? That's really going to be taking a lot of our time the next year or two. We've been doing some testing with the next generation, and we've always said that people in leadership don't have to be family. In the past, my dad's always wanted to start new businesses so that there'd be some place everybody could work. Well, we don't really seem to think that just because you're a family makes you a leader necessarily. You know, we're working on trying to find people's seat on the bus. Where do they fit in? And, you know, because you're not if you're not comfortable with the job you're doing, you're probably not going to be able to do that very well. So we're working through that right now, and through testing. We're not really exactly sure how that'll all work out, but it actually is the more complicated piece of it. You know, not ownership is, you know, there's lots of things you have to think through, but management is now it becomes personal. You know, if my son doesn't get the opportunity to be in leadership, how's that going to feel? You know, and so those are things we have to work through. But like I say, we have started down the road of doing testing and things, and we'll see where that all ends up.
I got something I think I'm going to share with this group because I think it's important. I didn't even tell the rest of the guys I was going to do this, but as the point I'm in my life, and since things are pretty well set of where we're at and what our retirement is and all those things, and I guess it's never been that way, working for that paycheck and working for that next dollar, and I put in a lot of hours because I guess our passion for it, we like to see it succeed, use the gifts that God has given us. But when people ask me, you know, what my greatest joy is, my greatest joy is when we sit around a table and decide where we're going to give to kingdom work. And we have made a commitment as a company. We're first fruits giving. We tithe. And so when it comes to donations, we talk about who we're going to support, what we're going to support. And obviously, there's a lot of diversity in that and what we can do. And we've recently done something with the shareholders that we give them a portion of our giving. Our giving is decided in the previous year. So based on our profits from 2016, we'll decide what we give in 2017, so we know how what we do it, what kind of a year we've had. So that's easier than just going through the year and at the end of the year say, oh, we got to give this or that yet. And so that has worked very well. You know, we even have a donor advised fund, so if we have money that we want to put aside for something else later on, we can do that. But so the shareholders all get a portion of that they can decide where it goes, and so they feel involved in that. But giving is a very important. I don't want to brag about that or anything, but I just want to challenge all of you that's important. And we heard Diego say how he felt he needed a tithe even in the situation he was in. And if we wait to give until we have enough, why, we'll probably never give. So I just want to challenge all of you that should be a very important part of your business model, or at least I hope it is, in kingdom work. So now we'll open it up for anybody that has any questions. Andy can facilitate that, and we'll try to answer any questions you might have. We have a compensation committee, which is mainly our board, and we work on that, and we kind of have a plan. If they move into certain levels, they can reach certain salary things based on how long they've been there and how they participate. And any of you can elaborate on that?
I think it's been a little bit different in my generation than it was in the previous generation. And I think that is one of the things that changes as you go from a founder to a second generation to a third generation and so on. So in general, you know, the paycheck, the salary of my grandpa Howard, that didn't really mean anything. He was the owner, whether it was his paycheck or the profits of the company was the same. His desires were for his children all to be paid the same. And so they were. And it didn't seem like that was going to work real well moving on into my generation. And so we've created some, like Dad said, some different levels. We know that there's people that are paid less than maybe what they should. And then we know there's some people that are paid more than what they should. And I think the closeness of our family has helped with that. Not to say there's never any issues, but I would say they're pretty rare or not creating any problems at this point. But we have done quite a bit of work and feel that probably fair market value compensation for Generation 5 is likely going to be the route that we need to go. Of course, that's not all laid out yet, but we started that way, I guess, this last summer with my son working.
Actually, until this year, both husband and wife were both on the board. We just changed that. We're trying to become a more working board, and we gave them all the opportunity to be part of it, but none of them wanted to be on the board. So, yeah, it wasn't that we didn't want them on there. It just, you know, the commitment of being on the board was not something they wanted to be a part of. Now, our spouses, my wife actually runs a Christmas shop at the hardware, and so she works, I don't know, 60 hours a week for several months during the winter, but then she doesn't want to work beyond that. So, I mean, we've not tried. We'd love to have some of the female gender people move up in our organization, but they don't really seem to want to go full-time, or, you know, it feels like when they have children, they go part-time. And Yeah. That is one of the things that we felt like we wanted to make sure we were paying our next generation enough that if the wife wants to stay home and take care of the children, they can. And all have chosen to do that, pretty much.
And as far as, there are two sons, Howard and his brother Wayne, and then there's three son-in-laws, which I'm one of them, that are on the board and operate businesses.
I think it's hard, maybe I can't speak to this because I'm a blood relative, but I think that we've done a relatively good job with the in-laws being brought into the organization, brought into the family, and really on equal standing with any of the blood relatives. So we, you know, when we had mentioned of the 20 shareholders that 11 are full-time, some of those are in-laws of the shareholder, or spouses of the shareholder. And so I think we look at those on the equal footing.
Maybe you haven't experienced this, but I'm wondering if you've done anything proactively to deal with the dynamic of, do employees ever have a sense of, because they're a family member, they get special privileges or consideration?
At the hardware, we now have one of our top middle management people is Nunn family. And, you know, that's one of the moves we made towards Nunn family, but, you know, we hope that people who are family take more responsibility and more owner, because they are owners and part of the company, and they need to be an example. Does that always happen? Maybe not, but that's kind of what we hope for with it for our family members.
And in this building, both Salad Dressings Gift Shop and the restaurant, I am the only family member here except for my one brother-in-law that takes care of buildings and grounds for everything. And so, yeah, all our management people here are non-family.
But I think we'd probably be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that there have been comments made. Is there a glass ceiling? Do I only have the capability to go to this point? I think that's one of the things that has spurred or has been a reason when we say, do we want to grow and why do we want to grow? I think it was talked about in one of the seminars the other day. And that's one of the reasons we want to provide opportunity for family, but also for non-family members to continue to find places to advance. Our e-commerce division, which is our fastest growing part of our business, has been managed and given vision to that operation by a non-family member for the last 10 or 11 years. So,
I have a question to ask myself. I did during the tour yesterday. I'm from Hartville. I was at the Hartville Kitchen, quit working here about 21 years ago. As I took the tour, I saw a lot of the same faces, or at least some of them were the same faces from when I quit here, still working. So what is it you're doing to retain your good employees?
You know, it's a little hard to say. We try to treat people the way we'd like to be treated. We do try to offer a lot of perks for our employees and do as much as we possibly can because they're the ones that make us successful. But I think treating the other people like you'd like to be treated, we do some nice things for them. I won't get into all of them, but we'd give some bonuses. We have Christmas parties. We have picnics. We give free food to the people at work here. The hardware people have some others. They get some discounts and things. But most of all, I think treating them the way we'd like to be treated. And even though, especially in this business, it's a lot of entry-level people who are in high school or college and are going to move on to careers, so there is turnover. But our turnover, at one time I read that the turnover in restaurants is 300%. If you include fast food and everything, ours is more than about that 25 to 28%. We do exit interviews with every single person, and we ask, you know, why are you leaving? What's going on? And so we don't have a mass exodus because of things. I've had in 47 years, I've had one server leave for the purpose of serving somewhere else, and she later came back. And so something is going right. I don't know, but it really just boils down to our culture, I guess, and not saying we're going to do this so people don't leave. It just boils down to trying to be fair and treating the people the way you'd like to be treated and care about people. We have one other thing that I'm going to throw out there for you, and as part of what we do for donations, and we're not saying anything here to bring honor and glory to ourselves, you know, let God have the glory. But another way to get involved with your employees that I really enjoy doing, you know, when you have this many employees, things happen in their lives. And we care about what happens in lives, even though our attorney says that, you know, you can't even ask people why they were off and what they're sick about and what's happening and all that, because then you might make a decision that affects their life. So you're not supposed to do any of that. We still do. We care about our people. I had just the other day, and so we have a policy here. If the employees decide to put a bucket out and raise money for another employee, for whatever, they're off of work, they've had surgery, whatever happened, there's a death in the family, we will match whatever they put out there, whatever they raise. Just the other day, we had three of them going at one time in a dining room where this person was off sick, this person had this incident, they had a hospital bill or whatever. So that's one way to be where your employees are. And again, this is not to bring honor and glory to us, but it's a way that just give you ideas of things you can do. So as part of your giving, maybe, although it's not tax deductible for us when we're giving to an individual, we keep it to employees only. But if they have a, if they've had an illness or something going on, and that happens many, many times throughout the year for our businesses, and that's just what a privilege to be able to be where they're at and to meet their needs there.
We've never had any conversations in our, every once in a while it would be someone say, well, maybe now's a good time to sell, never about going public. But one of the things that we have said quite a few times, and we say it when we have meetings with our employees, is, you know, we have the ability to make decisions because we're not public, because we don't have to answer to Wall Street. We have the ability to make decisions that are not just for the short term. They're for the long term. I can think of a couple examples. One is when we decided to build a hardware store. And we opened that up in 2012. We started construction in 2010. So the planning was going on very heavily in 2007, 2008. And at that same time, it was probably the worst, at least in my 18 or 19 years, that we've seen in the building industry and, you know, the overall economy. And we didn't do layoffs, but we were considering. We didn't, there was a year, I think, that we went without raises that year, and maybe, cut back a few hours from a little bit of overtime we cut back. And so that was a hard conversation to have, to be able to say, you know, we're planning for the long term, with all these short-term things going on. So that's one of the things, I guess, to answer your question, you know, we haven't considered going public. And one of the things that we just really like about being a private small company is we don't have to answer to other people, to Wall Street.
I think I'd just like to add to what Gary said about that at the hardware store, especially when it was really rough during that 2008 recession, the choice that was made that even if we lose money, we're going to keep the people employed. Like you say, we did cut back on a little bit of overtime, but we made a conscious choice of, you know, when do we cut? And we just kept taking it a day at a time and saying, we will lose money before we will cut anyone's wages. And I think, for me, you know, we can talk about missionaries, and we can talk about everything, and people in here are mostly business people, but I think it's doing there's never always, at least for us, there hasn't been that one time big wow, which does happen for some people, but it's just continually being mindful of what God wants you to do. And I think searching the scriptures, living that life every day, God in some way is involved in every decision we make. And I'm never one that says that I'm going to lay out the fleece and this is the way it has to be. But I think if we have that mind of God, if we're working that way, and if that's our goal, he's with us to help make those decisions. Sometimes maybe we're not even quite mindful of it. But I've never been one that's been able to sit down and have God speak to me and say, this is what you do tomorrow or this is the decision you make. But I think if we're mindful and if we care, I think we will make the right decisions in the marketplace here and that God wants us to make. And I think when there was a talk about selling the hardware at one time many years ago, and it wasn't, we didn't go very far with it, didn't even talk about money. But one of the things that our attorney, which having a good attorney that understands your culture and understands who you are and understands that part of the business, because I always think you use different attorneys for different things because they're not experts in everything, but this is an estate planning. And he says, do you realize, and it hadn't really hit me before, of how many people depend on you every day for their living? And that really hit home with me, and I hadn't quite looked at it that way, but that in the bottom line is that's what's really important, to care about your people. So how do you keep people? Again, we don't do it perfect. We work at it. Just care about your people just like you care about everybody else.
At this time, that is addressed in the buy-sell agreement. The stock ownership is in the family line, and we have not done anything with, you know, prenuptial. We're not worried about the value of the shares of stock. We're worried about ultimately the, you know, the continuation of the business and not having problems, you know, being able to run the business. So, in the event of the death of a shareholder, the value of that, the company has the right to buy those shares from the spouse. So the value would go to the spouse, but the stock would not. And the same thing in a divorce situation, we would look to redeem. So the actual stock certificates are not allowed to transfer outside the blood family, but the value, of course, would be able to. And the buy-sell agreement is also set up. It's not quite as big of a deal now that there's 20 shareholders. It's only 5% of the business. So it doesn't create a huge financial hardship, but it's also set up that it would need to be done over a period of time. So the buy-sell agreement, I think, maybe if that would happen, it could be bought and paid for over, I think it's a 20-year period, so that it doesn't become a financial constraint to the operating company.
Are you